Welcome to the Arizona Traveler. My name is Vicki Duke, and I'm your volunteer broadcaster, bringing to you a series of articles from Travel and Leisure magazine, and I'm coming to you from member-supported Sun Sounds of Arizona. Our first article today in the March edition is Making Waves. A VIP offers insider tours of the glitzy island of St. Barts and explains why its beaches are some of the world's most coveted, by Ross Kenneth Erkin. It was a cloudless morning at Eden Rock, St. Barts, the glamorous resort known for its celebrity guests. After sweeping through its CNBC Sand restaurant, I sauntered down the palm tree shaded front steps to find my taxi. I was not looking for just any cab driver, though. Seated behind the wheel of a gray Hyundai H1 van was Helene Bernier, who is the vice president of St. Barts, a former French commune that is officially an overseas collectivity of France. Bernier also happens to be the owner of Easy Time, a tour company that offers illuminating drives around the island. Her tours are filled with local lore, A-list name-dropping personal stories and tales of real estate conflicts between longtime residents and the super rich. Dressed in a coral pink jumpsuit from Poupée St. Bart, a homegrown label, she greeted me with a warm handshake. After I hopped in shotgun, she chirped, "On y va. Let's go." Then floored it down one of the main roads in a fluster of franglais. Bernier, 49, launched into an animated rundown of her life. Born and raised in St. Bart, she has French ancestry on the island that dates back to 1648, which may explain her drive to protect its cultural heritage and environment. In 2009, she founded a conservation group called St. Bart Essential, and later was elected to the Territorial Council, the island's 19-member parliament, where she distinguished herself as a vocal critic of overdevelopment. In 2022, the island's longtime president, Bruno Magris, an airline entrepreneur who some claim helped turn it into a billionaire-saturated playground, announced his retirement. Bernier ran as a staunch environmentalist on a winning ticket with Xavier Leday, a fellow council member who was elected the new president. Bernier's role, which involves overseeing education, housing, healthcare, the economy, and serving as liaison to the French government, is a full-time position, but she manages to find time to moonlight as a tour guide. Our first stop was a curved escarpment on the island's northwestern tip overlooking Colombière Beach. Colombière is arguably the most beautiful beach on St. Barts, a secluded cove with Prussian blue waters that is accessible only by boat or a half-hour-long hike along the edge of a cliff. But that's not why Bernier took me there. She pointed out there were no homes or hotels to interrupt this pristine panorama, save for one property on the southern point, a 130-acre estate once owned by David Rockefeller that had just sold for $135 million. Views like this are becoming endangered, Bernier said. Some argue that the wealthy have been able to find loopholes in the green zone laws and build villas. Big real estate deals have become common in recent years, with billionaires clashing over trophy properties and bidding wars turning local landowners into millionaires. But those days might be numbered under the new administration. With us, I don't think that's going to happen, Bernier said before popping back into her car. Everywhere we went, Bernier shared battle stories that pitted developers against environmentalists. On an island as small as St. Bart's, about 10,000 residents on 9 square miles, she gets a call whenever a zoning violation is suspected. She also said she has received death threats and bribery attempts. As we zoom south past the red roofs of Gustavia, the island's main town, Bernier recalled how, through court actions, she stopped the American hotelier Denise Dupree from building a 50-room resort on the Baie de Saint-Jean, not far from Eden Rock. The decision is being appealed. Driving toward Gouverneur Beach, Bernier casually suggested we stop by the 70-acre estate owned by the Russian oligarch Roman Abramovich, who has emerged as an unlikely environmental ally on the island after funding a pond restoration and a soccer field. The estate's caretaker answered the phone but was traveling, so we could not visit. As we neared Grand Saline Beach on the southern coast, she recalled how she prevented Andre Balaz from building a beachfront hotel there. After a few nausea-inducing curves, we reached the island's southeastern coast. Bernier pulled the parking brake with a cartoonish ratchet sound and hopped out to survey this lesser-developed valley and the rocky shores of Grand Fond Beach. Then we drove down a steep, unmarked street near the beach where many of her relatives still live. This was the other side of St. Bart's. Instead of five-star resorts and million-dollar villas, the unpaved roads were lined with modest yet colorful tin-roof cottages known as Casas Crioles. Our next Bernier took me through a custard yellow cottage where her ex-wife was watching their three-year-old twin girls, and out to the deck in the back to look for whale flukes along Grand Fond Beach. It was prime season for humpback spotting. After mating in the warm Caribbean waters, the whales return to this coast between February and May with their calves. Bernier feels a maternal pull to protect this cycle of life. I try to preserve the land my father gave me and try to give it to my children, she said. After peering out at the horizon for about 10 minutes, we continued our loop. Our next stop was Toyny Beach, where the ballet dancer Rudolf Nureyev used to live. Growing up, Bernier used to see him practicing fouettes on his desk with the ocean as a backdrop. The villa is now the glamorous 22-suite Hotel Le Toyny. Before Bernier dropped me back at Eden Rock, we stopped at her seashell white villa near the lagoon at Grand Cul-de-Sac. Standing in her yard, she showed me a shady guaiac tree, an endangered species protected by ministerial decree, and pointed out her Sim 125cc motorbike, her main mode of transportation when not leading tours. This, she said, is her sanctuary. Developers have offered her $1 million for the land. Sometimes it's difficult to say no. The house itself, with its red tin roof, feels like a spacious, modernized Casa Creole, modest and charming. A laundry set folded on the bed, a dream catcher hung near the staircase. Her kids' drawings and a takeout menu were stuck to the fridge. She will sometimes invite people on her tours back to her house. Depends if they are nice, she said, flashing a smile. I like to tell the history of the island, and I am part of the history. Moving on into the intelligent traveler section, the lo-fi cure for 2024. If breaking news overload and digital distractions are taking their toll on your mental health, the time may be right for a phone-free vacation. Alice Robb dials up the details. Would Eat, Pray, Love author Elizabeth Gilbert have fallen so deeply in love with Neapolitan pizza if she had been taking photos of her pie to post on Instagram? What if Steinbeck had traveled with Charlie and Waze? These days, iPhones, laptops, and tablets, not to mention fitness trackers and smartwatches, are ubiquitous, making it feel all but impossible to truly disconnect. There used to be a distinction between home and away, says Trine Severtsen, whose 2020 book, Digital Detox: The Politics of Disconnecting, examines the dissolution of that boundary. These days, Severtsen adds, people do all sorts of things to self-restrict their media use, including turning off notifications or switching on airplane mode while on the ground. Proof of the interest in going phone-free can be found on Reddit, where forums like No Surf and Phones Are Bad host discussions on how to more effectively log off while on vacation. Now travelers can choose from a growing number of intentionally tech-free trips. Consider the startup Italian travel agency Logout Live Now, which organizes 1 to 5 day retreats in Sardinia on which guests lock away their phones in order to hike, kayak, practice yoga, and reconnect with themselves. Co-founder Gavino Puglioni said arrivals are visibly anxious when they hand over their devices and will often continue to reflexively touch their empty back pockets. But they eventually forget about their phones and start chatting with each other, says one recent participant, Mara Luzio. Instead of 3 days, it felt like we had 7, recalls the Graz, Austria-based software engineer. Time really expanded. Tara Capel, founder of the agency FTLO Travel, has noticed something similar. After successfully instituting a no phones at dinner rule on some of her company's group itineraries, she launched a series of phone-free trips to destinations such as Costa Rica, Cuba, Iceland, and Portugal. Digital cameras are still allowed. Without that distraction, the experience feels so much richer because you're just immersed in it, Capel says. Hospitality brands are also embracing the trend in the hills of Umbria, Italy. It has no Wi-Fi, but does offer a heated plunge pool, yoga classes, and candlelit vegetarian meals. Luxury spas, including Rancho La Puerta in Baja California, and Miraval Resorts, which has 3 resorts in the U.S., discourage phones and laptops in common areas. In the U.K., Unplug now has a network of 19 tech-free cabins within an hour or two of London or Manchester. They've proven particularly popular with couples, says co-founder Hector Hughes. People who have been in a relationship for 10 years haven't spent a day together without phones, he observes. In the U.S., the company Getaway offers a similar approach, with hundreds of tiny home hideaways within a short drive of major metro areas. Many experts emphasize the need to avoid half measures. The most effective retreats happen when you're completely disconnected, says Melissa Huey, a behavioral scientist. It's a lesson I learned the hard way recently on a 2-week writing retreat in the woods of Georgia. With Wi-Fi limited to only one spot on campus, I found myself obsessing over when I'd be able to check my messages rather than enjoying the opportunity to log off. It's an addiction, Huey acknowledges. For London-based photographer Elena Bazou, a weekend alone in an unplugged cabin was much more successful. For the first day, it was scary, she admits, but on the second day, I was okay. Since then, she has committed to weekly walks without her phone. I feel much better mentally and physically when I'm not checking it all the time. And that's the end of that article. Next, getting the crew together. On a family vacation in Croatia, aboard a well-appointed goulet, Heidi Mitchell learns to go with the flow. Here's how you can do the same. I'm the first to admit I'm a type A traveler. If there's an itinerary to plan, I'll stage manage everybody out of the way in order to coordinate it myself. It's been my familial role for 20 years, and usually my siblings and our spouses are happy to step aside. But last summer, I had no choice but to back off. That's because my big sister suggested my family join hers for a sail along Croatia's Dalmatian coast. Her husband, Siho, is from Bosnia, and he knows this part of the world well. His advice that the 12 of us spend the week aboard a traditionally styled teak sailing vessel known as a goulet. These broad-beam boats are most closely associated with Turkey's turquoise coast, where they were first used by the Ottomans for fishing and freight. Recently, they've gained some renown among yacht enthusiasts visiting the Eastern Mediterranean, where several hundred are now available for charter. Still, it's fair to say many Americans have never heard of them. It's pronounced goulet, by the way. That's quickly changing, says Karen Fedorko-Seffer, founder and CEO of Seasong, a travel company that specializes in Turkey and has been arranging goulet trips for decades. For people who want to be alone together, it's just perfect, Fedorko-Seffer says. There's so much outdoor space they can tuck into tiny harbors, and the vessels are authentic to the region. Bookings for 2022 surpass those of pre-COVID years, and the summer of 2023 was up another 25%, according to Seasong. The UK-based agency Peter Summer Travels has noticed a similar uptick in interest, with demand for charters among its US clientele up 10% compared with 2019. Why would anyone book a yacht? Fedorko-Seffer wonders rhetorically, particularly when one considers that chartering a luxury goulet with a crew costs about a third less. The terrific value is what sealed the deal, though I'm sure my sister was also glad I wouldn't be taking the wheel. Seho had selected the 92-foot Gardelin, which would have to have a full crew to take care of us. We set off from the pretty town of Trogir near Split and quickly fell into a blissful routine. Sleep in, swim or stand up paddleboard, eat breakfast, then cruise to another port to get into a bit of history. The 17s aboard were required by us parents to attend each guided walking tour. We had highlights including the 17th century Jaxa Palace in Vis, the island that claims Marco Polo as a native son, Korčula, and the Square of St. Stephen on Var, which looks like the Piazza San Marco in miniature. In the evenings, we had all returned to our boat for another swim. The kids would play Uno or climb back aboard the paddleboard. Then we'd do drinks and dinner in town. I'd occasionally retreat to my cabin for some me time, then emerge to challenge the kids to a somersault competition. After a week of swimming, sightseeing, and snoozing, I had learned to let go of my type A tendencies up to a point. When it came to winning best front flip, I simply refused to quit. Moving on into the magazine, back to basics. The latest trend in high-end travel, stripping away the luxuries and getting some dirt under your fingernails, by Sarah Greaves Gabadon. Last 4th of July weekend, while most people were scarfing hot dogs and knocking back beers, I was embarking on a 46-mile trek through Denmark, weighed down by a 25-pound backpack and the emotional fallout of a pandemic divorce. I'd signed up for a 3-day endurance hiking event known as the Fjällräven Classic Denmark, which is held every summer on the island of Funen, a couple hours west of Copenhagen. By the end of day one, I'd covered 18 miles, most of them in torrential rain, grunting my way through barley fields along seaweed-strewn coastline and up challenging hills. By the time I collapsed into my tent that night, I was exhausted and so grungy, I wondered if a hot shower would even help. Not that one was available. What I didn't ask was, why am I putting myself through this? Lately, I've discovered a different way of traveling, one that satisfies not only my desire to see new destinations, but also a newfound yearning to push my physical and often emotional limits. Prior to 2020, my trips revolved around beachfront resorts and butler service, but my priorities have since changed, and it turns out I'm in good company. We see travelers seeking out activities that require more mental and physical exertion, says Misty Bells, Vice President of Global Public Relations for Virtuoso, a network of luxury travel advisors. C-suite clients in particular want experiences that go beyond their comfort zone. Executives at the highest levels are willing to push boundaries and they like to test themselves. Among them is Steve Orens, the president of the agency Plaza Travel and a member of TNL's Travel Advisory Board. He started taking challenging hiking trips in 2020, and his first, a 4-day trek in Washington's North Cascades National Park, was an eye-opener. I'm used to butler service in five-star hotels and wonderfully crafted meals, he says, speaking to me from his suite aboard the Regent Seven Seas Explorer while sailing around Japan. I woke up in a tent the width of my body, he recalls, and when you had to go in the morning, you took a shovel and found a place to dig a hole. But being off the grid and in nature, Orrin's found, yielded rewards. You check out for a little while, and then you come back with renewed energy. You're more inspired. Since his first such journey, he's completed multi-day hikes in the backcountry of Yellowstone National Park and Alaska's Talkeetna Mountains, and he's promised himself that he'll do a rigorous group hike at least once a year. There's something that puts you back in touch with yourself when you don't have all those creature comforts, Orrin says. For all the positive, I'm still learning my own limits. This summer, I hope to complete the Walker's Hout route, which unspools for nearly 140 miles from Mont Blanc, France, to Zermatt, Switzerland, skirting 10 of the Alps' highest peaks. Outfitters such as Denver-based Max Adventure coordinate self-guided two-week trips on the trail. When I go, I'll expect to log as many as 12 miles a day. But at the end of each day on this hut-to-hut hike, I won't be pitching a tent and reconstituting dinner from a pouch. Instead, my daily mileage will conclude at a lodge where I'll enjoy my rightful rewards, a hot meal, a comfortable bed, and a steaming hot shower, the most essential of luxuries. Well, that's the end of our show and our time together today. Thank you so much for listening to my show, The Arizona Traveler. Again, my name is Vicki Duke, and I am coming to you from member-supported Sun Sounds of Arizona.